Well, hello, everyone. How are you? So my name is Yusuf Rappi. I'm the chair of the Washtenaw County Board of Commissioners. And usually at any event that I speak at, I like to start by introducing some of the people that are here who are in elected politics or hoping to be someday. And I only see one person in the audience right now, and that's Kirk Westfall, who's running for city council in the 2nd Ward. So thanks for coming out. I'm setting a little stopwatch for myself here so I know when to be quiet. So thank you all for coming. And thank you to the Ann Arbor District Library for having this wonderful event and the series of events. It's so important for the community to come together around these issues of sustainability, to learn not only what's happening in the community, but to learn how to get involved in making a difference. So what we're talking about today is local food. Local food hits us all pretty close to home because we all eat food. It's pretty essential in all of our lives that we eat good food to be healthy. But what we don't always think about are the ramifications that local food has and that our food system has on the environment, on our local economy, and on the whole state of Michigan and the whole country and the whole world, quite frankly. So we're going to hear a lot today about the things that are happening in Ann Arbor, the things that are happening in Michigan, to move the needle on making local food more accessible and on making all of us aware of what's going on. But the most important thing I think that we can get out of today is action. What do we do to move forward? Not just what's happening, how do we move forward? So I'm just going to give a little bit of background on some of the stuff that's happening in the state and at the county level. And then you're going to hear more detail about some specific projects. So the state of Michigan has been working on something called the Michigan Good Food Charter for quite some time. And you're going to hear a little bit more about that from Hillary Bisnett later on in the program. But that is such an important step in the right direction that our state has taken. To talk about local food at the statewide level and to talk about what it means to get good food, which is sustainable, which is healthy, which it impacts many different aspects of our society and our state. So the fact that they're doing that work is so important. We have some local folks in Washtenaw County who are involved in those discussions to help put the Michigan Good Food Charter together, like Amanda Edmonds and many others. And so, you know, they've done a lot of great work. A lot of great energy has come from our county. But one of the things that I'm very proud of that we've done at Washtenaw County to move the local food discussion to the next level is to actually create something called the Food Policy Council, the Washtenaw County Food Policy Council. The County Food Policy Council is a group of citizens who get together and talk about how we can create better policy to create a framework for how we can move local food forward in our community. We have talked about everything from food stamps at the federal level to local procurement at the county level. So that's something that we're working on aggressively right now, is making sure that Washtenaw County government, which purchases about $40 million worth of goods and services every year, invests a portion of that money, at least, back into the local economy. So we've been doing a lot of that work at Washtenaw County recently in the last 3 to 4 years. And there's a lot of work that you all can do in that regard as well. So I'd like to talk about action steps, too. The Food Policy Council is subdivided up into 5 areas. We call them policy action teams. And each of the policy action teams gets together and talks about a specific issue. So one of the teams, for example, is about managing food waste. So they talk about composting. They talk about styrofoam. They talk about packaging. They talk about a whole slew of different things. And if you're interested in that, get involved in the policy action team. We also have a policy action team about zoning. They talk about zoning regulations, exclusionary zoning for agriculture in cities and townships. If you're interested in that, get involved in that policy action team. And that's a great way for anybody to connect to the work that we're doing at Washtenaw County to move this forward. Fundamentally, this is a movement that depends on all of us, because we as the consumers will make a difference as to whether or not local food is something that catches on, that stays with us, and that builds our economy. When we think about the economic downturn that we've gone through, and we think about where we go from here, we need to think about the local food economy. We need to think about how we can put the cottage food bill that was passed in Lansing a few years ago to work. We need to think about all these things because it applies to our local economy and it applies to the jobs. When we talk about job growth, we need to look at local food. When we talk about economic opportunity for those who are in communities that have traditionally been disadvantaged, where is food making an impact in those communities? We need to look at those things. And then the health implications, of course, are huge. Good food needs to be accessible. And talking about that economic opportunity and social equity piece is very important as well. So I've done a little bit of talking, but I really want to let our guests do most of the talking here today. So I'm going to start by introducing a very good friend of mine. Bob Greasy is the director of the Mathai Botanical Gardens and Nichols Arboretum. And he's going to start off today just talking a little bit about some of the stuff that they're doing over there. But before I hand the mic over to him, I really want to thank you all again for being here, and thank you for your commitment to local food, to healthy food, to accessible food, and to moving this conversation to the next level. And I hope that you'll all listen for the little pieces of how you can get involved in each of the areas that our presenters have to talk about. So with that, I'll hand it off to Bob Greasy.
Thank you, Yusuf. Well, I'm delighted to be part of this discussion. I don't pretend to be an expert on food systems, but I have gotten very much involved with a lot of groups on campus at the university that are very much involved with food. Some of you know that we've established the campus farm at Mathai Botanic Gardens. We also help host an organization called Cultivating Community. There's been interest really growing in two levels at the university, one from a faculty perspective and the other from a student perspective. From a student perspective, there's an organization called the University of Michigan Sustainable Foods Program, which is a consortium of about 10 different organizations, all related to food. And I've got a small video that talks about that in relationship to the campus farm. And then the other small video that I want to share is more faculty related, about a sustainable food systems initiative, which was established, started really about 2 years ago, when a group of faculty put together a proposal to administration to hire 5 new faculty in sustainable food systems. And they include areas of public health, School of Natural Resources, Environment, Urban Planning, Ecology and Evolutionary Biology, and there's a 5th person yet to be hired. But it's really energized thinking about courses on campus that are being taught, bringing them together. There's now been instituted a food systems minor in the program in the environment, and there's now also a graduate certificate in sustainable foods. So even though we're not an ag school here, we're really embracing that food is important across a variety of disciplines at U of M. So what I'd like to do now is to turn to the first of these videos and let the students really speak for themselves rather than me speak for them.
We have artichokes here that are growing, zucchini, squash, we have pumpkins that are thriving, and tomatoes that are about to turn, and lots of different varieties of peppers.
Classes have been looking at ways a farm might connect to other parts of the university to get students familiar with the farm and think about how it connects to their time here at Michigan.
We have engineers come out, we have art and design students come out, and they come from all different backgrounds.
There were several classes of students that helped develop plans for the farm. Students in landscape architecture, students in urban planning, students in a food systems class.
Our vision for the farm is that it would be a really interdisciplinary space. And we'd love to see a lot of student work happening out here, whether it's research projects or design projects.
I thought it was a great opportunity to create a space that could be an educational opportunity for students.
We were calling it a living learning laboratory. It's small enough that it can be still used as an educational tool.
It adds like a certain depth that you wouldn't find in normal classes.
I like that I can see how the food starts and then ends up in our hands.
How many young people in college have the opportunity to grow their own food?
This summer we've been lining up a lot of faculty who want to bring their classes out in the fall and weave into various curricular parts of the university.
I have a lot of hopes and aspirations for this place. I want it to be just a resource and an area for students to restore in nature and to get their hands dirty, but also to use it educationally.
It's more about building leaders in many different fields.
Every time I come out here to volunteer has been wonderful. Each time there's something new to appreciate. I feel in touch with the food here and the people, and I enjoy the community.
It's not necessarily just about growing food, it's about growing community and relationships among different disciplines on campus.
Okay, then the second of these videos is more about the Sustainable Food Systems Initiative, which is more of a faculty-driven academic program. And it'll explain a little bit about this connecting into classes at U of M.
There were four red apples. These are really exciting times at the University of Michigan. We have a Sustainable Food System Initiative with the participation of many, many faculty and students, graduate students, undergraduate students.
This is a really exciting time in the United States and on a world scale to think about food systems.
The university has made a really big commitment to developing sustainable food as a discipline that the university is really interested in.
I'm part of the Sustainable Food Systems Cluster, hired in recently here at the University of Michigan.
So the university has allocated resources and education and created this intellectual community around food systems at the University of Michigan.
The student interest in sustainable food systems in the School of Public Health at the University of Michigan has been enormous.
The University of Michigan Sustainable Food Program offers lots of different ways for students to get involved, no matter what your interest is. We have 10 different student groups here on campus, and the role of UMSFP is really to provide resources to all of those groups and to introduce them to one another.
Kale to the Lakers!
I started UMBs because honeybees are experiencing dramatic population decline today. And we, as humans, rely on honeybees for pollination services for a third of our food. This group was created to promote, protect, and propagate honeybees.
I've been teaching classes to undergraduates about the food system for 15 years. And when we first started out teaching our class, we had trouble filling it, but now the class is overflowing with students, and in fact we have a wait list often of more than 50 people.
Expose students to the food system from production to consumption.
I think there's a momentum now where the changes the people are pushing for are actually going to be fundamental changes in the way that we think about how we organize our society around food access and food security and the way we produce our food. So having these cluster hires and having the initiative that the university has put around these four cluster hires is really critical.
Our program has quite a strong emphasis on what's going on in the United States, especially in Michigan. There's also tremendous opportunities to do international work on food systems and agriculture. So it's not just about the United States, it's about the world food system.
There have been so many students who have knocked on my door and who have come up to me and just very excited about the broader movement that we're seeing in the United States and abroad. Around these issues.
I came to graduate school to study food and food systems, and Michigan has been an incredible place for that.
And so it's possible then to engage people from many different departments and disciplines in the study of the sustainable food system.
So I'll just end with a couple of comments that in addition to those faculty that are featured in the video, there's about 20 others that have identified themselves as part of the Sustainable Food Systems Initiative. And constantly courses are morphing around campus. There are courses in the English department, courses in public health, courses in ecology, courses in urban planning and architecture. And so it's really pretty exciting time for these to be emerging at a place like U of M. In addition, those of us involved with a number of the student groups are trying to walk a delicate balance between not trying to control the sort of energy and direction that students are heading, but try to help keep them sustainable as a movement within campus. It's going to be pretty exciting, I think, over the next couple of years to see where it goes. And clearly, one of the things about these efforts at U of M is it has to be connected to the community. And there's great interest for us to partner with the local food movement here in Washtenaw County. So I look forward to talking more later as we have some questions. Thank you.
Thank you for that great presentation, Bob. And while you were up, a couple more people walked in that I do want to introduce. Leon Bryson is running for city council in the 5th Ward. And then Raina Bosch walked in. She's the clerk for Ann Arbor Township. And I don't think I'm missing any other candidates or elected officials that are here. But again, thank you all for coming. Our next speaker is Sarah DeWitt, also an old friend of mine from the Farmers Market. She's the Farmers Market manager, and she has all kinds of great stuff to tell you about today. So I'll let her come up.
There are about a million things you could talk about when you talk about the Farmers Market and its role in sustaining a local food economy. So I'm going to try to really bring it down to just a couple key points. When we decided to talk about all these different issues this evening, one of the things that all of us speakers sort of kept coming back to is, what can you walk away with as an access point? So what can you do when you leave this room that will get you more in touch with our local food economy than you probably already are in some way? So I'm just going to touch on a few things. When I was thinking about sustainability and the market, I think there's some general idea about how the market functions as a sustaining point for a local food economy. So I actually asked a different question. I asked, what sustains the Ann Arbor Farmers Market? And I kind of came up with three key ingredients, if you will. So I'm sure there's a million others, but these are my ingredients for this evening. So number one, it's the people. It's myself, it's the other employees, the people who volunteer their time to clean up the market at different points in the year. It's all of the vendors and all of their employees as well, both on farms, in kitchens, at the market, who bring us all this wonderful food. And then finally, it's all of you who come to shop at the market to ask good questions, to really engage with our local food economy at the market. And the second sort of sustaining point for me beyond people is the food itself. So we really operate a market that the average driving distance for the farmer is about an hour. That's pretty local. That's pretty awesome. So the food itself is coming from about as close as you can get it. You have to go a little farther if you want fish. But we do pretty well in that regard. And the third thing that sustains us is really the investment, not just of your money to farmers or the farmers' time in their fields and their investment in what they do, but also the investment of knowledge that we share with each other about what our local food system entails and how that food comes from farms and kitchens to our farmers' market. So the things that I think sustain the market are people, food, and the investment of time and money into our market space. Use my handy clicker. So as probably many of you know, we host a variety of businesses at our market, from food to craft, from prepared food to raw vegetables. And I think that's a sustaining point for what makes our market work and what makes markets across Washtenaw County work. We have an amazing number of farmers markets just within Ann Arbor. And you're going to hear about one of those a little bit later on, too. But for instance, we have a new vendor who's going to be starting this summer, and they're actually Vellum Restaurant that just opened on Main Street. They make their own butter using Calder Dairy, which is also local, and they're going to feature that particular product at our market on Wednesdays and Saturdays. So it's kind of another way to feature and support local businesses outside of perhaps their traditional front door entrance. It's also another way to feature a dairy farmer or a produce vendor within a local restaurant scene, and then also to bring that back to the farmers market so you can access that local food in a multiple in multiple settings. So we have someone like that who's relatively new, relatively young, relatively small, everything up to Alex Nemeth, who's a third-generation, you know, apple orchard farmer. So we really host a variety of sizes. As Yusuf mentioned earlier, we have a number of vendors who participate through the cottage food law, so they're able to make certain goods in their own home if they're not able to purchase space to or rent space to operate in a commercial kitchen. So we're really giving people an opportunity to tap in as a vendor from a number of different perspectives and in a number of different ways. I think this is pretty self-evident, but we serve as a central access point to local food, both, as I said, whether it's getting something from a local restaurant out into the community in a different way, or actually getting you to shop at a different location than you might otherwise. We serve as one of the access points for you to find food that's grown as close to your home as possible. Who shops here? Parents, students, students from U of M to students in K through 12. Local businesses shop here for their food, whether that's local restaurants or you know, local employees of local businesses who pick up their groceries on the way home. We service a variety of different people in our market, and that access point is really key for that variety of people to tap into. Another thing that sustains our market, as I said, is the people and the investment of knowledge. So my big key takeaway for you all this evening is to ask good questions. And when you come to the market, to think about the what, where, why, when, hows of how that food or that product got to the market and what is involved in getting it there. So I would encourage you to ask, who are you? Of the vendor. Who are you and how did you get here? You will probably learn some very amazing stories. There are lots of people who sell food at our market who didn't start out as a farmer, or maybe they did. So I've been really blessed to share in those stories, and I encourage you to ask those vendors about who they are and where they come from. Secondly, what do you grow and what do you make if it's not just produce? And what variety is it? You know, what are the ingredients? What goes into making this food product what it is? That will tell you a lot about your local food source. Not all local food is created equally. So it's important to ask, you know, what you're getting from the vendor. Where is it made or where is it grown? We can also tell you this in our office if you'd like to come ask. But you can also find out a little bit more about where the farm is situated. Anytime I'm out on country roads, I think, oh, that's so-and-so's house, and that's so-and-so's greenhouse, and it's nice to feel a little bit more connected to the people that you're purchasing the food from. When was this grown? It could be a storage crop. It could be something that they picked 2 hours before they stuck it in the truck, so that probably means they got up in the middle of the night to do it. Is it a perennial plant? Is it an annual? How does it grow? Those are really great things to ask because these are the people who have the intimate knowledge to get you to enjoy that food in the most delicious way or in a way you've never had it before, or to make sure that your plant doesn't die in the middle of the summer. I know I get a lot of really valuable information from all of our vendors. And finally, how was it grown? What are the systems that were used on your farm to make it grow? What's your irrigation like? How do you deal with pests? You know, things like that. That's really important to getting to know a little bit more about what makes the particular farm or the kitchen work the way it does. So I really encourage you, you don't maybe have to ask all of those to every vendor, but, you know, pick one, pick your question that you think is really important, and feel free to ask it. I think that that's a really important part of really investing and sustaining a local food system is knowing what it entails. And my final point is sort of the why question. Why is it important to ask all of these things? Continuing to know the answers to those kinds of questions at a place like our farmers markets helps to continue the cycle of investment in our local community. It helps for all of us to become more invested because we know the answers to those questions. We know how much work goes into creating those local foods for us to consume. And I guess I would also like to offer that I encourage conversations over label wars. So really another point of asking questions is not to get caught up in rhetoric, but to find out the real pieces of information from our individual growers. There's a lot of labels, and I think it's a lot to work through. And so I think a really great way to tap in to maybe learn more about a particular label or a particular growing practice is to learn that from the vendor themselves. They are, as I said, they are a wealth of knowledge, and that really helps to create good dialogues that support us to make, as Yusuf was saying, good policies going forward, because they are really based on investment in the community and on knowledge and not just on going to the grocery store, buying something that has six labels, and going home. So labels help us, but I think it's really important to engage in conversation. So I would recommend, you know, ask good questions, and I think the answers will take you a very long way. So I will leave it at that, and I look forward to talking to you more a little later. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for that great presentation. Really quickly wanted to say, so I was at Sarah's wedding a couple years ago, and it was a gorgeous event, but I've really been proud of her and the work that she's done with the Ann Arbor Farmers Market. I think you got that job just a few months after your wedding, but you know, she has just done such a phenomenal job, and her presentation today shows the passion that she has for the work that she does. So she's a great person and does a great job at the farmers market. I want to thank her for that. I also wanted to say just quickly, one of the pictures that you had up there, the guy with the bike helmet, he's a buddy of mine, Ryan Hughes. He comes to the farmers market every Sunday with a shopping cart, and he lives on the top of Water Hill. And so he pushes the shopping cart down Water Hill all the way to the farmers market, fills it up with produce, and then pushes it all the way back up the hill. And so that's the kind of, those are, you know, that's an example of the kind of people that love food. And, of course, Janine, you know, bikes to the farmer's market all the way down Packard and then all the way back home with your big yellow, you know, containers and the 350 flag. And sometimes I see you biking down Packard, and it's awesome. All kinds of great community that's built there. So thanks for your work, Sarah. Next, we have Jenna Bacalore, who used to work for the county. So we're tight, too. You know, I just want to highlight, you know, all these great people. She's now the executive director of community education and the recreation at the Ann Arbor Public Schools. So she's going to have a lot of great stuff to say for us today, and I'll let you take it away. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. It is so great to be here, and I look around and I see lots of friends and acquaintances from different parts of the food system here in Washtenaw County. I'll say hi, and I look forward to talking to you afterward as well. I am the executive director now of Community Education and Recreation. You may know it as Rec and Ed, and get our catalogs in your mailbox occasionally throughout the year. I'm also the chair of the school district's Farm to School Collaborative, so I'm here speaking in both contexts today. All right. All the photos are local school kids in Ann Arbor. So the question that I was asked to try to answer is, how does Ann Arbor Public Schools, and I'm just going to refer to it as AAPS, support a sustainable local food system? And I think we do that in a lot of ways that are somewhat invisible in the community, so I'm really happy to share a lot of it very quickly with you tonight. We are an institutional purchaser of local food. We are growers of local food. We are composters. We contribute to the food safety net by donating a lot of food to food gatherers. And of course, we're educators of 16,000 students who are the future farmers market shoppers, future chefs, future food industry workers. So having that appreciation of local food is something that can travel in many ways through the kids that we educate every day. And these are just a few examples of some of the things I will be whipping through in this presentation tonight. Okay, so the Farm to School Collaborative serves as somewhat of a hub for the activity that happens in the school district. This is probably the only meeting in our school district where people may come with dirt under their fingernails and nobody blinks an eye. Our purpose is to create those connections between what's happening in the school district and what's happening in the community. So you can see we have different members from different parts of the school district, Rec and Ed, our food service, or Chartwells, parents, teachers. We have a couple people in the room tonight who are involved as parents in the in this collaborative, and the Ann Arbor Farmers Market. Sarah is a great member, and U of M, Washtenaw County Public Health, Project Grow, and Agrarian Adventure. All right, so I want to talk about how we source local food into cafeterias, and I'm sorry this is such a grainy picture. There are two ways that we do this. The Farm to School Collaborative back in 07, 08 started a program called Farm Fresh Fridays, and it was to connect with local growers and bring food that was donated for them from them into our cafeterias. Chartwells would kind of prepare it, make it ready for consumption, and it was distributed free in our cafeterias. And that program has continued and grown. So now we don't call it Farm Fresh Fridays anymore. We call it Farm Fresh Features. And these are kids at Carpenter Elementary School who are very excited. You're going to see a lot of excited kids in my photos. They were shucking corn that was donated from a local farm and that then ended up in the cafeteria that day. We also, the food service, which is Chartwells, also spends about 10% of its budget every year on local food. And this is actually a slightly old number. It's from 2010-11, and I think it's gone up because they've started doing things like buying local berries and other types of fruit and freezing it in the summertime. All right, another wonderful program that started with the collaborative but now is completely run by Agrarian Adventure is the Farmer in the Classroom program. And is anybody from Agrarian Adventure in the audience tonight? I'm wondering. Okay. So the Farmer in the Classroom program is an opportunity for farmers, chefs, and local food artisans to come directly into the classroom and talk about what they do. So it's a really nice introduction to a world of occupations for our kids starting at a very young age. And as you can tell, this is, well, you may not know this, but Bryant Elementary School is a K-1-2 school in our district. And so these are little kids learning directly from a farmer about what it is like to be a farmer. And this program is very popular. We often have more demand from teachers than supply of farmers. And I did want to plug as one access point, Agrarian Adventure is hosting a program called Get the Dirt on Farmer in the Classroom on April 17th, and I have that information if you want it later. All right, and of course, a very popular field trip every year for hundreds of elementary students is that trip to the farmer's market. This happens to be one of my Rec and Ed summer camps. They walked down last summer, and they bought some produce and took it back to their camp and had it for their snack that afternoon. And, of course, I have to talk about our many school gardens. We have 12 gardens going right now. It waxes and wanes a little bit because they are completely volunteer-run, and they so it can shift around a little bit every year. They operate fairly independently, but the collaborative over the years has supported with writing grants for supplies, with workshops, just kind of training. And this year we've spent quite a bit of time developing recommendations for school garden safety. All right, so let's get back to some more excited kids. All right, have you ever seen a group more excited about shoveling compost? I think not. These are kids up at King, which has a large garden there. Here are some students at Tappan Middle School who are very carefully planting seeds. And again at Tappan, preparing beds. And, you know, this is just one of many examples of how this can connect to classroom curriculum, because they can obviously do math and science. So everybody's favorite part is harvesting, and here's some kids at Burns Park Elementary School harvesting their radishes very proudly. this is harvesting. There's somebody in the audience in this picture. more harvesting from Burns Park. And I just think it's really cool to have corn at your school that you've grown. And over the past several years, a few elementaries have done Three Sisters gardens with corn, beans, and squash. And, of course, that opens up lots of great educational opportunities in history and culture and horticulture. And, you know, obviously kids love to have a little snack, and tasting at King Elementary School is always fun. And I don't have a picture for it, but some schools have really embraced composting in a big way, and Project Grow has been a wonderful resource for us in doing that. All right, now I get to plug one of my favorite things about Rec and Ed, and that is our Green Adventures Camp. And the Green Adventures Camp started a few years ago. It's an academic enrichment camp for elementary and middle school students that's focused on teaching conservation and ecology. It's very child-centered and exploratory in nature, and about 500 kids participate in this program every summer, and some sign up for the whole summer, and they're with us all summer. About 4 years ago, our staff made a connection with Rainer Farm, and the Berry Farm had been sort of defunct for a while, and got into an agreement, and our campers and other community volunteers have revived the farm, and now it is a fully functioning farm. And guess what? We have 6 beehives, and you'll notice in this picture that we have some little beehives and we have bee suits, and we have some big bee suits, and we got a grant to buy little bee suits. And so kids can really safely up close learn about bees and pollination and all of the different issues around honey production and, you know, all the hive collapse and all that great stuff. So that is a highlight, and I think it's unique that we have that. All right, this is another photo of the farm itself, and kids love coming out. Of course, we provide shade, but there's they're not just like working out there, they have it's a opportunity in the summertime to really see an organic farm and really get a little bit more deeply rooted. Sorry for the pun, but understanding those organic methods, crop rotation, how to talk about insects without it, without using herbicides. So it's a wonderful opportunity for children in our community. And okay, getting the signal. All right. So in summary, I think, you know, what happens in the schools is often invisible unless you have a student at the school or you happen to have some other connection. But I hope what you can take from tonight is that in lots of ways, the school districts support our local food economy by buying food, producing food, composting food waste, and developing this next generation of kids who appreciate local food and want to be involved in it. Thank you.
Thanks, Jenna, for that great presentation. And not to mention the fact that, you know, all local food, the local food movement starts with the youth. So the work that you're doing is absolutely important, and thank you for all that you do. Next, we have Hillary Bisnett, who I just met today. So she seems awesome, though. So good luck. And she's the Healthy Food and Healthcare Project Director at the Ecology Center. So that's pretty cool.
Thank you. Well, not long ago, I think I was that youth, so just a comment on that. But thank you all for allowing me to be a part of the agenda today. You probably think, you know, what does healthcare have to do with this? And maybe that could have been my 10 minutes tonight. But I'm actually going to talk about something that is a little bit more timely, something that we actually launched just this last week, But before that, I'd like to introduce also Nikki Milgram is one of our staffers at the Ecology Center sitting in the back here, who helped with the Local Food Summit just a week ago as well. So, and also, I guess, to back up too, our organization has been in this community for almost 50 years, the Ecology Center, and you also might know it as Recycle Ann Arbor. We're actually the parent organization of Recycle Ann Arbor. So I'm going to change gears just a little bit. I don't want to just talk about healthcare, but I also want to talk about state-level work. And the connection that Yusuf, I think, made for all of you earlier was that there's something called the Michigan Good Food Charter. That charter was created in 2010, but work started well before that time. But the thing to know about the Good Food Charter is that it's a vision for Michigan. And there's many other states, I think, that would like to have a vision such as this one in their state. So in 2010, a number of stakeholder groups came together to agree on this vision, but also created a number of work groups. Those work groups actually include youth, good food access, farm and farmers, infrastructure, so that's how our food moves around the state, maybe processors are as well included in that, and then another group for institutions. So that's what I'll be talking about more tonight. I also wanted to provide you with a little bit of statistics. Not all of us know what's happening across the state, but these are some high-level ones. In 2012, Michigan State University did a survey with Michigan vegetable farmers. Half of them are interested in selling to this market. So we see as a new market opportunity for them, maybe one they haven't considered before, or an expansion for them, a way to grow and sell to a new market. Also, we know, and thanks to other speakers tonight, that there's interest by our schools in purchasing local foods. And then lastly, our work has been taking place in the healthcare sector for almost 5 years across the state, and we have more than 100 hospitals committed to buying 20% of their food by 2020 from Michigan resources. So what is this network? I think for most of you, it's a way to plug in, to share, and to learn from one another if you want to continue conversations after tonight. I think it's also a way to align yourself with what's happening in our state. So we have this goal of 20% of Michigan foods to institutions by 2020. I also think it's important to note the supply side of this work. What can we do for farmers and food businesses? How can they profitably supply this food chain and this goal that we want to achieve? This is an extremely long link at the bottom of the page, but I wanted to give it to you as an option to find out more about the network, and I did leave some sign-up sheets at the entrance if you want more information. But together, we wanted to break this down. What do we need to do to achieve this goal? We want farmers and food suppliers to actually be able to get their food into those institutions. The example talking about Chartwells with Ann Arbor Public Schools, that didn't happen overnight. There's a lot of logistics and barriers that we have to overcome to make it a successful operation. Institutions actually have to know where their food comes from. We've been disconnected for so long about where that food comes from, and finding those connections and establishing those relationships, knowing your farmer and knowing your food is highly important. And then lastly, for all of you, eaters, that you identify these foods when your kids go to school, maybe you're visiting a loved one, or unfortunately you find yourself in a hospital bed. We want you to have the healthiest, the goodest food for your body. So other ways to engage in this work. We actually created subcommittees. So maybe you're an advocate, someone who wants to join our outreach and engagement subcommittee and actually advocate for these changes in our institutions. Maybe you're someone who has already worked with your local school system and knows how to make this work happen. That's our tech ed, we call them, the technical assistance and education team. And then we have researchers. It was nice to see the presentations by U of M students. We know there's a lot to learn still, and we're asking you to plug into our research and impacts team as well. And if you're just interested in more information, Allison Oslin is another one of our staffers at Ecology Center who can help you find your way. And then you're thinking, oh my gosh, she's introducing something else to me. But we felt that there needed to be a public side to this work. Maybe you don't have extra time to dedicate to the network, but this might be a way for you to plug in. Maybe a recommendation to your local school or your hospital or another facility that you interact with. But we're asking institutions to recommit to this 20% by 2020 goal under this branded campaign called Cultivate Michigan. We want them to join by supplying and sourcing these foods, selling them, tracking these products, and then to promote it. I think we have to applaud the work that they've done over time and know that these challenges are difficult to overcome. There is a website if you'd like to visit it. It just opened last week, so bear with us with some kinks. But I want to point out overall that this is a place for news, events, resources, spotlights. We want to share your story. So if you have one to share, definitely get in touch with us. You can also see on this webpage who's already joined. And then lastly, in the little bubble there on the right-hand side, we will be tracking how many institutions are engaged in this work, as well as the economic impact. And I think Yusuf mentioned that earlier, but we want to actually quantify how much our Michigan institutions are spending on Michigan foods. So hopefully over time you'll see and be able to watch that campaign grow. This is the campaign for the institutions. In case there's some in the room, we did want to show you that this is what we're asking of you. We're asking you to quantify those purchases, but not just to do that for our sake, but to do it for yours. So we're providing this tool as a resource for institutions to track their purchases over time. They might want to start by just high-level numbers, or they might want to break them down. So it really is a tool for their food service operations to set goals and to achieve them. We've created more useful tools for them. This is a product guide. We felt that some institutions weren't able to tackle this easily. So we're focused on these pieces called product promotions. So if there are farmers in the room, these are the products you might want to consider growing this year or selling to institutions. We see it as an easy way to get your foot in the door. Asparagus is the first product, and then we'll be focused on blueberries, tomatoes, and apples. Some pretty low-hanging fruit. Again, no pun intended. There's procurement resources. Recipes are always important to this work that have been tested by institutions. And then promotional pieces. Again, we want eaters to be able to see these foods wherever they go. We also are trying to do a plug for Michigan Market Maker. Again, if you're a food business, a buyer, or a producer, we highly recommend you creating a profile on Michigan Market Maker. And this is really matchmaker.com, if you will, for the food world. So check that out. As I mentioned, there's some promotional pieces that we have. For schools, this is a great one, the asparagus poster. It has a lot of fun tips and facts on it. We have stickers, we have window decals, all of that. So if you are interested in getting involved or want these resources, we have them available. So that was the state strategy. And just the recap here, you can see we're talking about economic impact, but we are talking about people. How many meals are served annually? We're talking about product promotions, and these conversations about bringing all of the supply chain partners together in order to achieve what we want, which is the 20% by 2020 goal. But we know that there's going to be a lot of opportunity for innovation, so we want you to join the conversation. But before I leave you, I thought I'd share a little bit about what I know in our backyard. I do know that the University of Michigan Health System offers a produce cart on campus and has also been working hard to get more local food into their cafeteria and on their patient menus. This is one of the signs that they put in the cafeteria. So if you haven't been there, they're working hard too. St. Joe's, I might have saw a couple of colleagues in the audience. I want to do a shout out there. Our friends over at St. Joe's have been working hard. I believe they have almost 20 acres under production. Here you can see one of the hoop houses is handicap accessible. That's a partnership with the Eisenhower Center, so working on patient rehabilitation. They have two other hoop houses, and they bring that product into the hospital cafeteria as well as host a weekly farm stand. And then talking with the other speakers or panelists, I realized that the Washtenaw Food Hub didn't come up, and they've been a great partner of mine, and thinking about how we move this food is highly important. I know Kim Bayer's here in the audience, and I hope there's maybe other representatives from the Food Hub, but we can't do it without having this regional food distribution in our community. So I just wanted to do a shout-out for them as well. And so no matter where you come from or who you are, I recommend visiting cultivatemichigan.org, and I look forward to speaking with many of you afterwards. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Hillary. That was a great presentation. I learned a lot. And one thing I wanted to mention really quickly is, you know, you talked a lot about hospitals, schools, stuff like that. One thing that I'd like to, for folks to think about is, what about local food in prisons and jails? And the county has a jail, and that's something that I've been advocating for. So I want to talk a little bit later, maybe during the Q&A, about some things that you guys can do to get involved in helping to make that happen. Next, we have Evan Dayringer. Now, Evan is another good friend of mine who I've known for a long time, and he's Eat Ideas Farm is his one of his projects right now. Another one of his projects is cheering him on from the back, his new baby. And there was a wonderful article about him and his family in the Ann Arbor Observer recently about all the fun things that they're doing. But I'll let him tell you the rest.
Hello, everybody. Yep. So as Yusuf said, I'm Evan Dayringer, and I'm a local farmer, and I help with Bee Bars, which is my partner Britton's raw bar business, and I've worked at Tantre and Frog Holler, and you know, definitely been at the Ann Arbor Farmers Market quite a lot. But today I wanted to talk a little bit about another farmers market, which I've been part of the organizing team for, and one of the vendors, and let's get this queued up here. Oh, look, is this, do I just hit play and it's going to do its thing?
Yep, hit
one more time and it'll just go. Okay, cool. So the Cobblestone Farm Market is on Packard Road from 4 to 7 every Tuesday starting May 20th. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about all of this policy stuff, sort of bigger picture, sustainable local food. And Cobblestone Farm Market, I think, is just a great example of what it can look like. You know, you see herds of smiling children. You see stories being told. You see really great food on display and being sold and enjoyed. You see these connections being made. We've talked about, you know, growing community, meeting your neighbors, having this sort of like gathering force that sustainable food has a real potential for. So basically, Cobblestone Farm Market has this great story of being very much rooted in the community. It was just a couple of neighbors over on Easy Street talking to each other, and they said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had a farmer's market right next door? And, you know, 8 months later, they went to the city, they went to the Cobblestone Farm Association, and got some friends together who were willing to volunteer a lot of time and effort to make it all happen behind the scenes. They talked to a lot of great farmers and bakers and food vendors and just talked to a lot of their neighbors and made this vision come true. And so, you know, we're talking about access points. We're talking about things you can do is just envision what you'd like in your own neighborhood. What would you like to see happening right next door? And get your friends together, get your neighbors together, and get out there and just make it happen, and it really can happen. It's pretty amazing. We've got, I believe, 30 vendors over the last 2 years, about is the average. I'm checking with Janine over here just to make sure. But, you know, people who are making food, who are making a living, who are going on to make these great economic impacts in the community. It's really become one of those third places. You know, people go to work, they go home, they go to work, they go home, and sometimes they can go to that third place, and they can meet their neighbors, they know they're going to have a good time, they know their kids are going to have a good time, and, you know, it's just something you can make a space for in your week. And so I wanted to really just come out and show what's been going on at Cobblestone over the last few years. To give people just a vision of, like, this can happen in your neighborhood. It doesn't have to be a farmer's market in your neighborhood. Maybe you live, you know, downtown and you can go right to the farmer's market. Or maybe you'd like to get involved in your school garden. Or maybe you do want to get involved on a broader scale statewide. But, you know, this is why we're doing it. This is it, you know. This is local food. George right there, he reminds me The Cobblestone Farm Association just recently celebrated 40 years as sort of a historical association, but they've been really working with us closely. We're actually an event of the Cobblestone Farm Association, but we, I think, have brought a lot of new energy into this organization. Those are all the pictures, but I'll just keep that running. Oh, or maybe I won't. But I think that's a nice taste of sort of what has been going on over on Packard Road for the last couple years. And I really want to encourage people, 4 to 7 every Tuesday evening, all summer long. It goes into November. Come out. You know, bring your family, bring a friend, or just, you know, make it there on your way home from work. And you won't. You'll be glad you made it, and we'll be glad you made it. And go out and make something similar happen in your own neighborhood as well. And thanks a lot. I'm looking forward to the Q&A. And thanks a lot, everybody.
Well, thanks, Evan, for that great presentation. One of the most important words, I think, for the local food movement, and you guys can start moving up there if you want. One of the most important words, I think, for the local food movement is together, and that's one of my favorite words just in general, because I really feel like we can make a difference together if we work together to make that change, but also we need to be together to make that difference, and this is an example of that, people coming together, building community to make the change that they want to see in their neighborhood. So I thought that was a great slideshow. So I'll stand up here and moderate the Q&A, but the floor is open for folks that want to ask questions. Be sure, however, that you ask your question from the mic at the back of the room, because we want to capture all of the questions on camera so that folks at home can watch it or online later. So if folks would like to line up at the back of the room if you have a question, you know, we can just form a line and go from there. So I'd like to invite anybody that has a question to just step on up to the mic. Looks like Leanne might have a question. And I do want to put a plug in right here, and I'll plug it at the end too. We need to be out of here by 8:30-ish. So we will have about 25 minutes of questions here, but we will continue the discussion at ABC. I'll be going to ABC to have dinner because I haven't eaten yet. So join me. All right, Leanne, go for it. Yes.
Hi. My question is for Sarah. I was wondering, you know, with the genetically engineered food and people are being concerned about factory farming and the effects of, you know, genetically engineering food, is it possible at the farmer's market that we could have the farmers that use GMOs, could they have those products labeled for the community so the community could know what foods are not, you know, chemically produced versus the ones that are natural? I realize that the organic farmers market organic, which is great, but the ones that aren't labeled, we don't know, so we have to ask more questions. And I was wondering, is there something that we can do to have those specific products, the genetically engineered ones, labeled at the farmer's market for the consumers?
That's a good question. And actually, I appreciate that you've asked it. No one's ever actually asked me that directly. So, I mean, obviously, as you've said, GMO labeling is a hot button issue. And I think it's something that people are hoping to see on a wider scale, you know, in grocery stores and commercially speaking. We don't currently have sort of a mechanism to ask our vendors to put that label on their product. And I think it would take, you know, some sort of impetus from the community requesting that support. So certainly your question has me intrigued about whether or not there are enough people who would like us to do that. I guess I would go back to the idea that there are so many different factors that go into farmers' choices about what they grow and what crops are available for them to grow and growing practices, et cetera, that we really host the full diversity of that. I think in terms of asking one particular kind of vendor to label a particular kind of product, we're going to then get into lots of questions about every other vendor labeling, all these other different things. So again, not to say that I actually think it's worth looking into the way we ask vendors to communicate what their practices are and what they've done to consumers in a more appropriate way or a more transparent way than perhaps having to feel like you're asking a million questions. So from there, I guess I would say I think that's something to explore in the context of how we communicate the practices in general of all of our vendors. Because again, I think if you're going to start looking at one particular label, you have to look at sort of all of the labeling practices. But thank you. It's something I will think about.
Great. Thanks for raising that question. It sounds like something that a community dialogue is would be good to help, you know, move that conversation forward. So thanks for bringing that up, Leanne. Are there any other questions from the audience? Janine.
Thank you, all of you, for all the good information and all the great work that you're doing. I have a question that some of you may be able to answer or guide us to a way that we can help work on this, and that is a lot of the customers that come to our market are kind of put off by the price of organic or fresh-grown food because they're comparing it to the other food, the foods that they get that are similar in other places. I wonder if, as farmers markets together and as other people who are working to have local food, if there's a way, perhaps at the university, that students could do this to make some kind of posters, literature, educational pieces about this that could be an educational piece for all of us to use when talking to people about that issue of cost.
Great question. Thank you. Who would like to take it? And let me just say, while you guys are trying to figure out who's going to take the question, I'll try to answer it a little bit. I think part of that answer is, how do we make the value argument for paying more? What am I paying for? What's the, you know, and just quantifying what you're paying for is healthy. It's helping the environment. It's, you know.
I think, you know, one of the real key issues, one of the real key components of that is, you know, fresher food. It's that's been harvested locally, it's, you know, you're eating it the day after it's been picked, and getting that message across to people, you know, it takes time. It's hard to say that, you know, and just as the depth of what you yourself are eating. I mean, you are what you eat, very literally, and this is also one of the cases where you can get what you pay for, and that's a hard thing to communicate. I do think one program that we're really hoping next year at Cobblestone is the Double Up Food Bucks. And so for people who have SNAP benefits, that goes a really long way of saying, okay, I can go to the farmer's market and it's, you know, my food money is going to go twice as far. And you make sure you get to the market then. And then it's like, okay, now I have the freedom to explore a little bit, and then once you taste some of the local fruits and vegetables and say, wow, this really is different than what I was getting over at the grocery store. This really has that difference, but just getting people to take that step of making that first purchase or making that first taste where they get it in their mouths and they say, oh, wow, okay, I can really tell the difference. But getting that through that door is really important.
Yeah, I would echo that, just saying, you know, it's an experience of tasting that local food that really, I think, it changes a lot of taste buds and minds and hearts. I do think it's a prioritization issue, so it's individuals making choices about how to spend their dollars. And I think sometimes it's really overwhelming to feel like I have to change all of it to local or all of it to organic or all at once. So I usually recommend, and this is a great thing to share with people, if you're already eating a certain way and you want to share that with someone else, recommend that they change one thing. You know, change your eggs or change your lettuce, and kind of gradually build in those changes so that maybe it doesn't feel like you had to take on a whole new cost level, but you were able to incorporate one or two things, and then when you're ready to make another change, add another thing. You know, I think sometimes it feels overwhelming, and so to have that experience of maybe one particular item and to build that into your budget is a good way to go. And as Evan was saying, the Double Up Food Bucks program is a grant-based funding program that we currently participate in at the Ann Arbor Farmers Market, and I'm getting nervous because the person in charge is in the room, so I don't want to botch the definition. But but basically, for customers who utilize SNAP benefits, which is the federal food assistance dollars at our farmers market, we're able to incentivize that, offering grant funds in the form of tokens. And this season, this year, is going to run June through the end of October. And basically, we can double the amount of money we're able to give this customer up to $20 per market day. And so they're able to get, for instance, $20 off of their Bridge card, which is their Michigan food assistance card, and then $20 extra to spend on Michigan fruits and vegetables at our farmers market. They can also use those extra dollars at other farmers markets who are participating. So as Evan said, it makes it a lot more manageable to think about adding local produce to your budget if cost is an issue.
I would add that I think your question is a really good one that I can take back to colleagues at the university to think about the kinds of student projects that might sort of analyze hidden costs in terms of long-term investment, land use, other sorts of things that may contribute to a better understanding of why there's a difference in costs and what it means for our community long-term.
And I was just going to reiterate, too, I think it would be excellent to see that come out of the university from the research perspective, but also know that I think institutions are falling into that same world of individuals, is how do you pay the true cost of food? And so it's a big part of the same barriers we're trying to overcome. And I think the same suggestions you had is start little, talk about replacing each item, baby steps along the way, but remember to eat seasonally. When products are in season, sometimes they might be a little bit more within your budget. And remembering about food preservation, when they are in season and there's an abundance, talk to that farmer, see what kind of deal you can work out with them. I come from a farming background, so I know my dad always gave a few deals at the end of the day.
So Janine had a follow-up question.
So I really appreciate all of the comments on that. Bob, you got at a bit of what I would also like, and that is, so can we have that information so that we can display it, so that we can put it out to people, we can put it on our website, we can put it in different places, like the answer to the question, why do eggs cost this much, or, you know, what's behind that, or what's a sustainable cost for something, because here's the hidden costs and here's all those things. So thank you.
I know I'm not a panelist, but I'm just going to jump in anyways and just say briefly that you know, one thing that I heard a little bit of up there about the SNAP benefits and, you know, food assistance, I think is important. But I think really not forgetting that for some people, they, you know, that can't pay their heat, that can't pay their electrical bill, every dollar counts. And so Michigan Good Food Charter, I mean, the local food movement in general has been focusing on, you know, food accessibility. And what that means is, how do we bring food to everyone, not just to people that can afford it, but to people who are struggling to get by, because we want to make sure everybody's healthy in our community. So I think your question speaks to, you know, both making the case for why we should, you know, be willing to spend more, but also, you know, speaks to the challenge that we face in ensuring that local food is accessible to everyone.
Oh, I was going to actually jump in one thing about that, too. If we're growing a local food economy, you know, when they started building cars on the assembly line, they said, you got to pay these people enough to buy a car, you know. And if people are in the local food economy making enough to buy local food, then that's a way to solve the problem right there.
Yep, and if we're creating new opportunities and economic growth, then that's a great point. Thank you.
That was a really great point, Evan. Thank you. And thank you all for all of your work. It's great to see you, all-star team up there tonight. And I guess this is a question. I just kind of want to start a discussion or continue a discussion about this. But a lot of the work that you are all doing, which we all, I think, agree is a great public service for everyone in our community, a lot of it is funded with grant funds and private funds and through sponsorships. And sometimes those sponsorships come from kind of uncomfortable sources, like beverage industry or, you know, places like that. And if we can acknowledge that these types of food programs, school gardens, you know, a Michigan branding farm to institution program, farmers markets, if these are a public good, at what point is there a lever that we can use, or can we really make the case for public funding for things like farmers markets? I say I work with a lot of farmers markets in my work, and a lot of them are very much struggling to get by because they don't have
consistent public funding behind them. So I just wonder if any of you have any thoughts on that and how we can work together toward that.
Hi, Rachel.
Go for it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I can take a quick stab at that.
I don't think they can hear you.
Yeah, it's taped. Well, while they're trying to figure that out, let me take a crack at a little something here. Since I'm in government and we face a lot of different challenges, so speaking to the funding question, you know, as we get restricted in the amount of money that we can raise, and Lansing is cutting our funding, and Washington's cutting our grant revenue and sequestration, and local government is just being pushed. I think part of it is, I'd love to push for investing in more, farmers markets and stuff like that, but we also need to build the societal awareness that local government can do good things and that we shouldn't just attack local government and government in general and cut them off at the knees so that they can't do anything at all. So, great point.
Okay. Thank you. I found a working microphone. So from the school district perspective, and I think this applies to school districts across the state of Michigan, as you probably all know, funding from the state has just decreased and decreased over the years. So our efforts are truly mostly voluntary. Our school gardens are voluntary. Rec and Ed works on a mostly fee-based system. We do have some sponsorships, but we're very careful with who we let sponsor programs. We do accept sponsorships for Green Adventure Camps and other programs that are related to local food, but we're very careful about it. I used to work for the county for a long time and worked at a lot of farmers markets too. And I agree. I think that farmers markets have been proven to be drivers of the local economy and job enhancers, job producers, small business producers. And I really would like to see them being supported in a civic way versus struggling as some of them do.
I guess I'd just like to nod to the fact that I myself am a product of a publicly supported market in the sense that the city has a lot of resources that they put behind me and us at the market. However, we've also covered our operating costs on vendor fees and most of our internal revenue. So also creating a model that's sustainable, that doesn't draw upon lots of extra city funds. So we, have tried to operate in that manner to cover our own costs over the history of our market. So, again, I think our market's actually a good example of sort of the direction to go in terms of the resources that public that governments have and that local public institutions have to support markets specifically, but other local food organizations. So, yay Ann Arbor. I think we do that. I think we do that, and I think that's really wonderful, and I think it's a good model for doing that elsewhere.
And maybe to take a stab at state level, I can't speak for all of the things that have been supported, but I know that a lot of the regional food system infrastructure has been supported over the last couple of years and seeing more investments in that. And without that, we can't move our local food throughout our state. So I do say that there are things happening, and I think we always can be doing more.
Great. I have so much more to say, but you have to come to ABC to hear what else I have to say.
As a follow-up to that, one of the things, my question is about what else the community can do, in addition, of course, to buying and eating local food to help make it flourish more in the Ann Arbor and the broader community. You go to some other cities, and they have, in addition to the great farmers market like we have in the summertime, they have indoor space that allows people, the farmers, to be outside in the winter or to be inside in the winter and people to come there, or community commercial kitchens. Would any of those types of things, or are there other things that would really help the food business, the growing and making of food, to really take off here?
That's what I was just going to say. So the county is thinking of investing in an incubator kitchen on the east side of Washtenaw County where there's the most economic need. And we're using this great funding source that we have available to us called Act 88. Unfortunately, Lansing's trying to take that away from us. So I'll talk more about that at ABC, but I want to let our panelists try to take a stab at the question too.
Washtenaw Food Hub.
Yeah, thank you.
So I know there are people in this room, maybe we'll be at ABC, who can fill in a little more, but the Washtenaw Food Hub is a great program right here. Well, I think technically in Whitmore Lake, maybe in Ann Arbor, but it's right outside of town. What's that?
It's in Ann Arbor Township.
Oh, Rena would know. Okay. It's in Ann Arbor Township. And basically it is very much about being a local processing and distribution center with that aim of providing the facilities that can let these food businesses, you know, find their feet and really take off and thrive and be that sort of resource for the local food ecosystem.
And I would say if people are interested in supporting K-12 and even pre-K-12 efforts to educate kids and offer hands-on opportunities for gardening and learning about local food, you can donate to the Farm to School Collaborative. Ann Arbor Public Schools is not the only school district in our county doing Farm to School. So if you're here from a different part of the county, you can check with your own local school district. But we're mostly volunteer and fee-based through Rec and Ed, so we can use extra help.
Awesome. So we have 10 more minutes. I'm going to ask the panelists. I'm not going to do any more talking, I promise. I'll ask the panelists maybe one person answer each question so that we can try to get through the full list of line of people that's waiting. So go for it. Let's just keep on going like this, but thanks for the idea, Odile. Yeah.
My question is coming from the perspective of a food grower, somebody who's sold food at the Ann Arbor Farmers Market in the winter, and somebody who buys food in the winter. I wonder if there's any conversations happening in the community about an indoor winter farmers market for Ann Arbor. That's my question.
So if you haven't had your fill of evening meetings, we're having a work session with the Public Market Advisory Commission, which is a public commission made up of a couple vendors, a couple community members who are regular shoppers at the market, and one Carytown area resident. So it's a little commission. We're having a work session tomorrow night at 5 p.m. to start discussing future infrastructure improvements and prioritizing those improvements for the market. This was looked at a number of years ago, not so much for winterization purposes, but you know, just expanding the market's infrastructure, and that got crazy large and nothing ever happened. So we're hoping to keep this contained and focused on things like winterization efforts so that we can not only support season extension growers who are obviously getting sensitive crops a lot longer throughout the year, but also to support more vendors to be able to come throughout the year, because for some people this is one of the places that they really make their living. So yes, we are having that conversation tomorrow at 5 in council chambers at City Hall, and that will be ongoing. This is just the first of many discussions. a2gov.org/market, and we put up our minutes and our agendas, and you can email me. I can give you my email address if you'd like to find out more about how to get involved with that, because we would love community input and support, and we will probably be putting out a survey for that input too this summer, so check out all of our social media for that stuff.
Great. Thank you so much, and we'll move on to our next question.
Hi, I'm Brett Zunar. I'm a student at Eastern Michigan University. I represent Food Recovery Network. It's a food recovery organization, and then we work with Campus Kitchens as well to collect food from Chartwell's and Sodexo and Bon Appetit and then give it back to local communities, because sometimes food gatherers, they take it out of Washtenaw. But if we want to focus on local, keep that here. But my question was about the Farm Bill, the 2014 Farm Bill that just went through Lansing. I didn't hear anyone mention it, and I wonder why. But I just wanted to mention on the organic crop insurance that Stabenow did try to introduce, and then when I talked to her about her position on labeling GMOs, like you said, we don't want to demonize the people who support genetically engineered farming. But for the cost of organic, I see it as it's expensive because we can't fully invest in organic because we're inadvertently investing in something that we don't want to because the label isn't there. So I was wondering what, and maybe you could answer on that regard, what is the state's exact reasoning for, I guess, not pairing organic farm subsidies with non-organic? Because why is there such a big divide between the insurance policies and the subsidies that we give to different sorts of farming techniques?
Hmm. All right, who knows the most about this? Yeah, I am.
That's like 100 years of information. Go ahead, Evan.
I am not an expert at all, really. But I know and there are big politics and big money, and I, you know, and.
Yes.
Pardon?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely there are some deep issues going on. I know, like, I think it's fairly recent, or you know, it's hard to even consider a lot of like produce operations as far as the USDA is concerned as a farm at all. You know, to them, it's sort of like a big garden. Like, you know, vegetables as a class are kind of considered like a specialty crop. A lot of these subsidies are really aimed, and the programs are really designed for, you know, like dried grains kind of things. Or, I think both, right, and whether they're modified or not, it's really focused, you know, and this goes back, you know, decades and decades and decades. And so, yeah, that is a juicy can of worms.
So I think actually if you're willing to come to ABC and keep the conversation going, that'd be great. But I want to give Odile an opportunity to ask a question as well.
I just read an article saying that Ford Hospital move on to organic produce for their kitchen and local produce. And I wonder if you have a strategy to focus on the UM, because there is a link between cancer and pesticide, and also especially pesticide and lymphoma. So I think it's very important that the hospitals kind of show the way with healthy food without pesticide and chemical. And I just, can I say just two quick announcements?
We really need to.
At the end?
Yeah, at the end would be okay. Better. Yeah, thank you, Odile. Does anybody want to take that one?
Definitely. Great. I think it's a great question or comment even to respond to. But I think someone said earlier, you are what you eat. Food is health, and reconnecting what we think of the healthcare delivery system to that is, we have a long way to go. Our food system is what it is, and that took 40 years to get us where we are. It's the same in healthcare. So the one thing I would share with you is that University of Michigan and others, St. Joe's, I think are really trying to get into the world of looking at organic foods and foods that are produced sustainably. I would just call out, too, and you talked about pesticides already, so looking at chemical-free produced foods. We do reference the Dirty Dozen, so if you aren't familiar with that, we do ask them to consider price, paying the true cost of food, but if they can't buy organic, then take a look at the Dirty Dozen list and consider products that are lower, that would lower the exposure to pesticides. The other one that's coming up quite often for healthcare is antibiotics. The misuse of antibiotics in agriculture is a huge issue, and I think the healthcare sector is seeing repercussions for them in terms of resistance. And I can also talk to you at ABC more about that. But there is legislation that's been introduced. We continue to work on it. It's called PAMPTA, the Preservation of Antibiotics for Medical Treatment Act. And it has support from more than 500 health organizations in the country. And it's somehow still split or divided the veterinary community. So I'm happy to take more questions afterwards about that.
Great. So what I'm going to do, since we have 1 minute left, and Jamie will never let me come back if we go over, I'm going to let our two last people ask. Why don't you ask your questions? We won't have a chance to answer them, but feel free to ask them, and please be as brief as possible, and we'll continue the discussion.
Yeah, I'm Madeline Grant. I go to University of Michigan. I was curious about the farm-to-school collaborative. So it's awesome, the 10% of food purchasing to local sourced foods. I'm wondering if that's tied into the I'm sorry, the name, the Farm to Institution Network, like the Michigan Good Food Charter, with branching that into the 20%, and how that's kind of, and maybe if it's not, if it's local, or is it genetically modified, is it sustainable, you know, some of those might go hand in hand, some of them might not. And also, and I can look on the website probably, I'm new to this, about getting involved in the youth farm to school collaborative.
Great. Thank you so much. And you should connect with Bob at the end, and he can probably help to answer some of that.
Pat Martz, I'm just a local resident. My big question, you've talked about a lot of great things tonight about bringing the future generations in and getting them acquainted with the idea and aware. But there's a lot of people who don't know how to cook. You haven't mentioned the word cooking. is there any talk about doing things like demonstration cooking at farmers markets or any sort of thing like that, classes to teach people just regular cooking, not gourmet cooking, just, you know, you got to get home and get a meal on the table in half an hour, and how are you going to do it with fresh local food instead of a frozen pizza? So that's my observation question, I guess.
That's an awesome question and something that leaves us a lot to think about.
And I just have one last thing. What the heck is ABC?
Oh, sorry.
Yay, that's a good question.
Arbor Brewing Company. It's,
oh, thank you. That
yep.
I know.
Okay, great. Does anybody not know where that is? The location, it's on Washington.
And we do have the tap room.
And we do have the tap room. The city can't buy you beer, though. Neither can the county. So let's wrap this up really quickly. Odile, can you be really short?
Yeah. At Cafe Verde next Sunday from 3 to 5, we have a discussion on permaculture, so everyone's invited. And around Earth Day, the Easter weekend, there is going to be a lot of festivity next to the library in the parking lot. We want to transform it into a park. Everyone's invited to do things or anyway, connect with me if you are interested. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Odile. So thank you, everyone, for coming out, for caring about this issue. Thank you to our panel for the discussion. And remember what I said earlier. This is a movement that we all need to be part of. And in order to join in, check out the website that Jamie has for this series, because she'll be posting links to all of the different things that we've talked about today, the things that you've seen in the slides, so that you can connect to the various things that are happening in our community. So make sure to check that out on the City of Ann Arbor's website, a2gov.org. Thank you all very much.